Welcome to How'd We Get Here, a podcast on education and design with wellness in mind. I'm Mark Anthony, and on today's episode, we'll speak to Heather Lowry, Associate Dean in the Faculty of Media and Creative Arts at Humber College, as we discuss Humber Play Days. Hi, Heather. Thanks for joining me today. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, and thank you for asking. I feel quite honored to be on the roster with the other guests you've had.
Awesome. Yeah, we have quite a lineup of our faculty members so far. So I decided to do this season based on load management. So how we can actually handle, you know, the stressors that come our way, the overwhelmingness that we maybe feel as students and even faculty at times. Mm-hmm. And I think Play Days fits into that. So I can't wait to hear your thoughts on it and what sort of sparked the conception of the idea.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to sharing.
So I know you recently got a kitten.
Yes.
How's that doing? Do we have a name for her yet?
She does not yet have a name. She's been here almost 3 weeks, but we have 8 people in the household and we do not yet have a collective. The only collective agreement we have right now is that we may each just decide to call her what we want to call her.
So it'll just have multiple middle names or everything just hyphenated.
So she's pretty awesome and she likes the dogs and I think she's going to rule the house pretty soon.
Yeah. I always thought cats would not get along with dogs. That's probably the cartoons I used to watch growing up.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's not true.
It's not true. It's not true. And she's so little. And they're, it's cute because they're big. They're 40, relatively. They're 40 pounds. She's probably 2.5.
Oh, wow.
But they lie down and they're so gentle. They're playing across a gate still. They're not playing in person because I suspect they'll chase her and I don't want her to get scared.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, she's quite a nice, all the animals are quite a nice, to what you were talking about, managing the load and managing this time. They're certainly helping with that. Yeah. And your little kitten, how old is Astro now?
Astro is, I think, about 3 months now. We got him when he was 8 weeks old.
Yeah,
he's about 3 months and he's getting pretty big. I can't even take pictures of him anymore because he's speeding through the house.
So cute.
Like just jumping everywhere. So I can only catch pictures when he's about to sleep.
Yeah, they're pretty amazing what they can do, these cats. They're versatile. and you know, it's relevant because they are driven by curiosity and nothing but, right?
It is. And that's what one of my friends was telling me. I was like, one time he was just going through everything and she was like, you just have to let him explore. He's curious. He just wants to know what's what. You know, they just want to see and touch things and know where they can go and where they can't go.
That's the only way to learn.
That's the only way to learn, right? And that's play, isn't it?
That's play.
Yeah. Good segue.
Yep.
So thank you for speaking to me today about Play Days, or as some of us know it as Week 8. Mm-hmm. I thought it would be a great idea to share the concept of this initiative with others and students who are maybe new to our school. Because I feel like the philosophy of play and promoting curiosity within our teaching and learning has so many tertiary benefits for our students and teachers as well. But before we get started, would you mind sharing a bit about yourself, maybe how you got into design, what you do now, and what inspired you to choose your career path?
Yeah, sure. I'll start with what I do now. And that is, as you said in your intro, I'm an associate dean at Humber College in the Faculty of Media and Creative Arts. And what that means is I am responsible for guiding the academic content and the quality of the programs within my cluster, which is also your cluster. So the cluster is the interaction design cluster, and it has 8 or 9 programs, depending on how you count it. I came to that role from the position of being a professor and a program coordinator at Humber. And I had actually designed the 3-year graphic design advanced diploma when I became a full-time employee back in 2004. And that was a 3-year advanced diploma that built a common 1-year platform with a 2-year advertising and graphic design diploma at that point. And I mentioned that because it's relevant to how I think about education, as do other people at Humber as well, of being a platform where students can explore.
Yeah.
So, you know, the wonderful thing about college education is that you get the skills you need and they're relevant and they're timely. And the challenge about college education is you go into a very specific program with very specific learning outcomes and you learn in a very specific avenue. So just stepping back for a sec to how I got here, I was always a reader. I loved books. I escaped into them early. And I loved E.M. Forster, an author, a British author, who liked to play along the edges of things and challenge convention. I went in when I was 15, so it would have been the early to mid 80s. I went to North Carolina and happened to go see the movie Room with a View, which was a movie of Forrester's novel of the same name by Merchant Ivory, who were beautiful movie makers at the time. And the opening credits had a typeface that I loved. So I found out what the typeface was, which wasn't easy in the 80s by looking at letterset books and things like that, and then realized that I really loved letter forms. So I always saw a combination between reading and literature and storytelling and escape and people who challenged conventions and the way that type looked. But in my family, you weren't supposed to go into design or art. That wasn't really an option. So I had started at University of Toronto once I finished high school at doing English literature. And I found something called semiotics, which was the study of meaning. And again, letter forms, the way a word looks, the way we place things on a page, as you know, as well as I do, affects the meaning, impacts the meaning, and also tells the audience whether or not they belong there. So I started really getting into all of these different things. And then there was a major issue in my family that really threw all of us off of the trajectory we thought we were on. And I had some time where I wasn't in school. So I took a course at the Dundas Valley School of Art. It was an evening course. I think it was on a Monday night. And it was a graphic design course, intro to graphic design. And I played with letters. The first project was to design one letter in four different styles. And I did four Qs and they were in squares. And I think we've all done that activity. And from that point, I was absolutely hooked and started trying to find out more about type. So through the roundabout way, I was lucky enough to study at Parsons in New York in communication design. I ended up coming back up here and going to U of T, again, finishing out my English Lit and Semiotics degree. And at the same time, I went to OCAD and did some more communication design. And this was, and I finished school at the beginning of the 90s, which was right as the digital era was upon us. Apple, of course, had released their computer in 1984, and the digital shift was upon design. Mm-hmm. So I started working at FontShop, which was a digital typography agency that came out of Germany. They had three offices at that point, one in Germany, one in London, and one in Toronto, which was the North American office. And I worked in software. But the thing about FontShop was that it was headed up by people who saw the shift, who knew that traditional type was going, you know, by the wayside, but wanted to continue to have the real type designers involved in type and to help people who are working in design agencies and advertising agencies select type properly. And so I got this great education there and then started teaching type in 1998. I was quite young, but I knew both sides of the tradition and the digital. And in 1999, I started teaching at Humber, York Sheridan, OCAD, part-time. And then I had some kids. I worked on my master's. And in 2004, I was hired on at Humber full-time. And that segues into where those programs were developed. Mm-hmm. I really got interested in human development and education and how we learn, not just because of my job as a prof, but also because my two kids are neurodiverse. One is on the autism spectrum and one is ADHD. And I saw them struggle with education because it didn't fit the way that they learn or the way that they do or the way that they interpret all the mm-hmm. time. But I knew that these were perfectly intelligent people who had a lot to give. So from that point on, that really started to influence me when I looked at our students. And I really thought about what it meant to be engaged, how we could meet the student where they are instead of trying to get the good students in. Let's get the elite students in and guide them through. Well, we're babysitting then, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. But what about those other students? What about the populations that don't see themselves, for example, in design? What about reaching out further into communities? So I saw the difference in engagement that meant the students in the middle of the pack did better. I had my assumptions about who a quote unquote good student was and a bad student was challenged again and again. And I was proven wrong wonderfully again and again. And I also realized the importance of relationship building. So that's all, that's probably way more than you wanted, but all of these things connected: language, design, creating an audience, thinking about the audience, education, development, and what engages us. That all of those things have brought me to where I am now.
Yeah, I love that. I was about to say, like, everything connected in a way that is similar to even my own feelings and experiences towards design and education, mm-hmm. and how we might find ways to enhance that breadth and depth of teaching and learning. So, like, as you say that, there's a lot of things I didn't even know about, you know, developing the program and things like that, which, mm-hmm. you know, your pathway kind of even sounds like mine in a sense. Yeah. So I totally feel that connection with, like, being a lifelong learner as you kept progressing and just, again, being curious to learn and add more so that you can fulfill, I guess, what your intended goal was.
Yeah. And I think along with that, it's something just occurred to me when you were speaking, because as a designer yourself, I think designers are educators by nature. Part of the job that you do with the client is educate them.
Yep.
And the same is true of nurses. My best friend's a nurse. Nurses are educators. That's mm-hmm. what they do. And so I think it's a very natural thing when somebody who's in design steps over into education, because you know, it's just natural. It's what we do.
Sometimes I say I do what I am, not what I do. Right. Yeah. So maybe we can start off with letting someone who's listening to the podcast now know, like, what exactly are play days? Mm-hmm. What does a week or a day of play days look like? And what is the process of students getting involved?
Sure. So play days is a concept that we came up with. And as you mentioned earlier, we originally called it week 8. Play days is the result of an opportunity of a number of different things coming together at the same time. Even when I was a prof and a PC, I wanted to approach how we delivered classes and design classes in a way that was more studio based or workshop based or the charrette model that is used in architecture. I wanted to deliver classes in that way, but it wasn't time yet. I didn't get the go ahead from the powers that be because we weren't there yet. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. But as I moved into the role of associate dean, as industry changed the way that it's changing, in that things change so quickly that people need to learn things that didn't exist 2 years ago on the regular. Yeah. And as I worked with the team of full-time profs, including yourself, within our cluster, we collectively had the idea that we often came back to in meetings that we wanted to do more multidisciplinary cross-program activities for our students, but that we were constantly frustrated by space and time and the resources that we have at large. A prof's life, a program's life is already insanely busy every week. A student's life is already insanely busy every week. Yet we wanted to bring in this stuff and we thought of it as extra, I think. Yeah. But I guess it would have been the 2018-19 academic year, Humber announced that we were moving to a 7-1-7 model in our semester, which means we'd have 7 weeks of classes, 1 week of reading week, and then another 7 weeks of classes, which was different from what we did before, where we ran 15 straight weeks, no reading week in the winter. And because we went to that 7-1-7 model, we saw that there was an opportunity to rethink how the courses were delivered and what the outcomes were, because we had to rethink for 14 weeks from 15 anyway. We saw that our cluster was building a really great team with our profs. That can't be underestimated, and the impact of that. But I saw professors working with one another, teaching in different programs, not just one program, sharing experiences, teaching modules, things like this with each other. These things are all very new in the last 7 years within our cluster and others at Humber. I saw things like little experiments that led us to be able to do play days, like in our animation program and our game program. This semester, 4 students worked together on a game in a studio-like environment. It took us 6 years to get it right, but we got it right. And those sorts of successes built confidence in our professors. And we saw the results in the students of reacting to a quote-unquote less structured environment, mm-hmm. but in a very authentic learning experience. Yeah. We also started working more explicitly with industry partners, bringing in those kinds of projects. And we talked about allowing students to drive their projects. We're working on that, but different profs experimented with different things. So we saw some capacity coming. So the opportunities, I think, that aligned to allow us to do play days, which we will describe still, mm-hmm. Were that we had the 717. So we had to restructure anyway. our faculty, sorry, it was a school at the time, the School of Media, the School of Media Studies and Information Technology got married to the School of Creative and Performing Arts to become the Faculty of Media and Creative Arts. So there was a little more change and shift happening there, which I think opens up the opportunity to play.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to say it that way, but I did. No,
it's okay.
We had people like Bianca DiPietro, one of our profs and PCs, and Rob Blaine, another one of our profs and PCs, who were able to go over to Europe and experience charrettes that were being run in schools over there. So they had some confidence and some understanding of that process from that perspective. We had about 25% of our faculty being interested in really robustly playing in a multidisciplinary way. We had about another 50% of our profs who were willing to participate and give it a try. And of course, you always have the people who sit back and say, this isn't for me, but we need those people because mm-hmm. we need somebody to point out what might not go well.
Yeah.
So, and then of course, there's also layered on that. We believe in inclusion. We believe in accessibility. It's one of the tenets of the Faculty of Media and Creative Arts. And it certainly is something that I know all of our profs hold dear, as do I. So we started seeing things like learners who might not do as well in the classroom would go into, let's say, a game jam situation and win a national competition. So we started to question our own notion of what learning was. And so all of these things came together along with my own feeling that sometimes I get bored if things stay the same too long.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way.
And I think we have a good number of profs with us who are tinkerers. They like to shake it up. They like to play. All of these things came together. So we rethought that 717, the semester change, and thought, let's take the week right after reading week, so week 8, and let's basically run, it's kind of a conference. It's a series of workshops. It's a series of charrettes. It's opportunities for students to break out of their normal curriculum and do something off to the side or something they've never seen before. Mm-hmm. And what we needed to do was have every single program buy in. And because we were reworking the semester anyway, we had the opportunity to say, bookmark this week. We will not have conventional classes, but we will do this thing called play days. And it will be graded because it is curriculum, which is still something, you know, I think we struggle with a little bit, and that's okay. Change is hard. But that was our decision, and we did it. Again, mostly people leaned in, and that's great. We didn't know what we were doing. It was definitely a rolling down the hill thing. For mm-hmm. me, it was important for me to feel that I could accept that I didn't know what I was doing, that something might go wrong. But the other factor that came into there, two other factors. One was that we got Samantha Araza, who's our program support officer for our cluster, who was there to do the back end logistical stuff, which made it possible. And also that we have a senior dean, Guillermo Acosta, who believes in pushing the limits. And he makes it safe to fail. Like if we had done this and it had flopped, he wouldn't have gotten mad.
Yeah.
And even though that didn't mean that there was any less stress, the weekend before play days happened, I don't think I slept very much. I thought, oh my goodness, what if this absolutely crashes? I've destroyed a week of time for the students. The profs have put all this effort in. And I felt like I was absolutely dreading it.
Yeah.
But I also knew that we had the backing of somebody who wants us to play and wants us to be curious.
For sure.
So, and that goes along with the other part of it that's very important is that industry wants resilient, curious grads. People going into the interaction design fields, let alone others, need to know that they're going to have to learn something new and they're going to have to learn it on the fly. And so that was the sort of pedagogical or andragogical justification for saying, we're going to have students learn things on the fly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So those are kind of the things that were behind it.
Yeah. And I mean, all of that is so interesting when you say that, because even when you talk about, you know, having Samantha, having Guillermo, mm-hmm. Having the faculty behind you, it's like the faculty's support is open to play themselves. So even to know that when you have an idea to restructure education, that even that in itself is open to the concept of play.
Yes. This was a very meta experience.
Yeah, it's very it's very encouraging to have that, right? Because I mean, there could be so much at risk at the same time. It's great to have those supports. Even the whole concept of what sparked the initial idea, it reminds me of even like my own prior experience. Like, you know, I started in continuing education where the programs ran multiple times a year, so about 2 to 3 times a year. And what I found is like there would be degree programs that would be like 2 years, 3 years. And something they learned in the first year, especially in our field, became obsolete in the third year. Yeah. Whereas in CE, we always had to keep flipping new things on the fly. So like every 6 months, it was like, okay, this is what the industry wants. We're going to teach it.
Yep.
And we had to adapt so quickly and always continue revising curriculum or even just constantly learning ourselves.
Because,
you know, you have to have faculty that's willing not to be stuck in their own ways and want to learn new things to be able to provide that skill set for their students so that they can be employable and on the cutting edge of the technology as well. When you mentioned play days, I was like, okay, I'm sort of built for this in a sense.
Yeah,
like I've been doing this already. And it also reminded me of my own research with like social constructivism and hackathons and learning within that studio-based or workshop-based environment where you merge industry and mentors and teachers and students and even people with other disciplines that might be connected to what the product is that you're building, right? Mm-hmm. Like you might have to work with someone in marketing or photography or infrastructure. And that's something that you don't really get access to when you're in, let's say, like my cluster, like graphic design. We might build apps like, I don't know, a parking app, but you don't get to get the perspective of an infrastructure or civil engineer or someone who might be related to that task, right? But in that environment, you kind of get that.
Yeah. We hear from our grads related to what you're saying now, because they're the quote unquote young kid in the office often, someone will look at them and say, hey, can you build a website this weekend?
Yeah.
You know, could you make this video? Thinking, you know, that just because they're digital natives, they have that comfort zone with anything that a 51-year-old like me looks at and goes, oh, that's a young person does that in their sleep.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Not always the case.
Not the case at all. There's so much more involved. And yeah, so many like other like skill sets that you need to actually make that happen, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a benefit of play days because it gives students the opportunity to be curious and go into other streams and pathways to be able to sort of like gain new skill sets that they can add to their toolbox, right? To make them a better equipped for those situations in their career. Even when I did my research, it reminds me of something I read by like Peter Gray. He did research on the impact of play and how play allows people to develop an understanding of their environment within like a safe space. Mm-hmm. So that when they are confronted with unknown situations, they don't react with fear. In essence, they don't freeze.
Yes. Right?
They are able to adapt and figure out ways to overcome obstacles. So by allowing people to play, they can explore their environment and be confident in taking risks without consequences. They're better equipped to solve their own problems, work within various social dynamics. And I think also it fosters the student's sense of autonomy over their learning, like you said, like developing creativity and embracing innovation. These are all sort of like byproducts of what I've seen come out of play days. Like when you conceptualize play days, are those some of the things that was sort of like your philosophy behind the concept? Like, were you hoping that this would be something that would be a byproduct of the education and it would transform students' learning in a sense?
Absolutely. And I think you're absolutely bang on that idea of the student having that experience and also the professors. You know, thinking of it beyond what the student's learning, we're at the stage, you know, in the fall, we ran 4 play days in that week, almost killed ourselves, as we know, with the amount of work we had to do. We took that down to 3 days in winter. That seemed to work better. But we actually surveyed the students about what their preference was for what they do during those weeks and then tried to scale what we offered to meet the student-driven interest. Mm-hmm. So some of that most certainly is there. But again, still that idea that the student had to be outside of their comfort zone.
Yeah.
They weren't going to just go into, and we learned that between fall, where we gave people a little more instructional stuff, you know, and options, because we were learning our way too. By winter, we sort of said, hey, let's make this more experiential and really push the students to be outside of their own discipline. So if you're a multimedia student, maybe you don't do the podcast workshop that you ran because you're already a video audio person, right? Maybe you're off and you're doing something completely different. So I think, yes, definitely thinking about the students having to think on their feet, not knowing. And the other aspect of it is we have 1,100 students in our cluster on average.
Why shouldn't they get to know each other?
Sorry?
That's important for people to know because it's a big thing that you have to manage.
In the fall, when we ran our 4 days, we ran over 400 hours of programming in the fall.
Yeah.
We brought that down to, I can't recall, I want to say 200 in the winter because we got more efficient and we got more streamlined and we also expected the students to do less because we knew our own capacity to deliver better then. And we wanted to do it better, even though fall was very successful. But I think that the other part of it is we want the students to know each other because what you said earlier was, you know, the student may not know how to do that and they want to build their toolkit. I think the other part of that is that they also need to know who to call. And observing our faculty team, and I'm talking mostly about our full-time group of about 24 full-time profs, but then we have our additional 50 non-full-time people. You see people in our group, in our prof group, who reach out to each other because they don't know how to do something. And that's okay, right? Yeah. Everybody doesn't have to be able to do what Umar can do. And, you know, I think that there's something to be said for the students building that network, because as we all know, it's so easy to walk into the college or, you know, now log into Blackboard and you don't see anybody outside of your own group.
Yeah, those connections are really important to make, especially when you're heading out to your career, because then it allows you to even, like you said, know who to call on, or if you're faced with maybe some sort of design task, then you know who's responsible for those things or who you can reach out to, right?
Yep, absolutely. Or just help you just a little bit, point you in the right direction, get you connected with the right resource. And then to what you've just said too, with the professors, there's the full-time group and there's the non-full-time group. One of the most wonderful, almost unforeseen things that came out of this is the play day sessions are facilitated by a team of profs, but we call them facilitators, not profs, because it's not meant to be a big lecture. It's meant to be, here's your task, go try, we're here to help, right? And we found that because our profs would be in the room, maybe two or three people would be in on a session, the profs got to know each other in a way that they usually don't. Even if they taught in the same program, they might not know this little bit about their lives. Like you and I talking on Instagram about some of our history because we were talking about a cat. Yeah. I didn't know things about you. You didn't know things about me, but we were connected over this one particular thing and we learned something. The same is true of what happened with the profs. And so we ended up seeing that after play days in the fall, professors now wanted to work together on different things. And they also had more people to call on, incredibly important for our non-full-time people who are juggling industry jobs, their own lives, and their teaching. Incredibly valuable for them to connect with other people within the faculty in a way that wasn't facilitated before, because again, your time is spent teaching in your classroom by yourself with your students traditionally.
Exactly. Like that's how I connected with Umar afterwards, because I actually figured out that he was doing something called a, what was it called again? Like it's like a capstone, but
it's midstone.
Midstone. So he was doing a midstone project, which is basically like a capstone, but in the middle of your program. And just at my desk, I was just assessing some typography projects. And, you know, I saw a few typefaces that I'm not too fond of being used. And I was like, I just wish that there was a way that I could, you know, train my students not to use these, but in like a gamified way. And then he comes walking along with two students and he's showing me their project. And I'm like, that's it. Can we work on a game that I can make my students play? And basically shoot all the bad fonts and collect all the good ones. And from that, it's like that became those students' Playday project. Yeah. And they're still working on it today as sort of like their midstone and capstone. And they got to work with some of my graphic design students and myself. So they learn about how to make the character design. I learned what goes into game design and mechanics and architecture. And just all around, everyone started to learn things. And I started learning more about Umar too. I bet the same thing that he learned about me and my background. So like you said, it's great all around for everyone involved to not only connect with each other on like a personal level, but even sort of like professional level as well. So I'm wondering, like, have you received any feedback from students or faculty from the Playday activities that maybe you've conducted previously?
Absolutely. So in the fall Playdays, some of our profs actually did a scholarship of teaching and learning research project around it, and they surveyed the students on what their perceived value was of this experience. And the feedback was incredibly positive. The students had enjoyed stepping out of the usual. The only complaints they had were completely legit, and they were about the organization of the event. We used Eventbrite and other things like this, and it wasn't smooth enough. And they're right, and that's okay. But the students were very engaged. And the other thing we saw was that 93% of the students showed up for play days. They had to physically be there 12 to 16 hours in that week. 93% showed up. And what we talked about and realized as a comparison is that in a normal class, on a normal day at Humber in our programs, our average attendance rate is 60%. Wow. So while we did give grades for play days, it was only 5%. And the students showed up anyway and engaged. So we also know that students in your workshop, for example, published podcasts and things like this. We saw students continue to work with each other afterward. And again, to me, as importantly, we saw profs in exactly what you just talked about, feeling like they had connected with other profs and that they had the ability to work together in a more supportive way. And I think loosely, we saw that come through during COVID, because when we all had to switch online on March 13th for the remainder of the semester, and now the remainder of the year, people knew each other better than they would have otherwise. So the students, for sure, to go back to your original question, very positive feedback. We also had the anecdotal things that happened where at the end of the week, profs heard students saying, oh, now back to the usual next week.
Yeah.
And they did ask if it was going to happen again, and they were interested in that happening. And we also had very positive feedback and attendance in our winter sessions. But I must admit that the COVID emergency hit a week later, and we haven't been able to go back over that yet. But again, we saw the signups happen. We saw the engagement happen. Mm-hmm. And we know that from the feedback from all of you as the facilitators, that things went very well.
Yeah. Like, I know that I've got a lot of feedback within the workshops that I conducted or the ones that I participated in helping facilitate. I did hear a lot of good feedback, and just not even to me, but just overhearing it, like eavesdropping on, you know, a lot of students who, even in portfolio workshops, who never got to learn how to make a portfolio in their course or their program, were now making one, you know, of course, like the podcast one, but even the ones that had industry involved, where they had this sort of like friendly competition of coming up with different design solutions and ideas. They thought of it as really fun, like just to be able to apply the skills that they've been learning in their courses within a specific time frame. Like, a lot of them were a bit nervous and didn't know what to expect. But then when they figured out that, hey, I produced this, I took this idea from concept to execution in like 48 hours, that was something that helped build their confidence and made them go back to the classroom and, I guess, be more engaged and more attentive, knowing that, okay, what I'm learning, I know I can actually apply it. Because it's different when you can now see what you're learning become this tangible object.
Yeah. And that was part of the concept as we were planning all of these things, as you know, where we would talk about what's the artifact that comes out of this experience, because we wanted the student to be able to look at that, feel that, see it, have evidence for having gone through that creation or exploration. And at the end of it, here's my proof, you know? Mm-hmm.
Like, it reminds me, like, early on too, like in my design courses before play days, like, I was experimenting with like weekly design challenges, Mm-hmm. And I've sort of like built that into my curriculum moving forward. And these are just like simple prompts that would get students to enhance their design thinking skills and express their creativity using more like tactile mediums. And it was also a way to get students to unplug and connect more with their surroundings and their peers and themselves in ways that they hadn't experienced before. So I also did some of these activities within the first like 15 to 20 minutes of class just to get them grounded before we focus on our weekly lessons. And what I found was that they were more focused and applied what they had learned about their abilities and creative thinking within their course assignments. So like everything that they got to do within those smaller prompts actually helped them to not only understand the concept of our lesson more, but they got to apply it in ways that they wouldn't have applied it. So example, brush lettering, right? Now I don't get just a typed out word using their computer. Now they're actually doing the handcrafted letter forms, scanning it, digitizing it, and then making it part of their project. And now it's a bit, there's a bit more of themselves in the project now, right? And that was all through play and experimentation and curiosity and being risk-free. Like you're not going to face a consequence if you do this wrong. Just try and learn on the fly, right?
Yeah.
So with that said, like what might future iterations of play days look like? Like, are there any thoughts on integrating play day activities into the core curriculum?
Yeah, I always have lots of thoughts.
Yeah.
I would say, yeah, I would love to see. I mean, I think it depends in part on it, some of this is how play days works and when play days work well, these sorts of workshops. Some of that is dependent on who's leading it, right? Who are the facilitators and what's the comfort level? And I appreciate completely that we're going to have a diverse group of profs where some people are very comfortable working with students on that kind of student-driven, curiosity-based, the process is really the focus model. And other profs, probably because of what their own backgrounds are and perhaps what they're teaching, are going to want to be more structured and closer to the traditional. But that said, I feel like the capacity building that has gone on through these two iterations of play days that we've done will help our profs do exactly what you were just talking about, bring these sorts of practices into their weekly classes, if that's what classes continue to look like. But I also think that one of the things we talked about as a team when we were first putting play days together, or week eight at that point, as we called it, was perhaps the students having a passport type thing. So when they graduate, they can actually show in their portfolio or on their CV, hey, these are the other things I did when I was doing my program. I actually designed a game controller and built it. You know, I actually published a podcast and so on. And I mean, I think quite frankly, the sky's the limit, and the Thai people say above sky, more sky, right?
Yeah.
I'd like play days to become even more student driven. I'd love to have situations where a student can come into our program, tell us what they need from us, meet the learning outcomes that we're required to deliver, but do it their way. So if somebody, let's say, has a passion for building a community service that's going to help, you know, a particular group with something, they should be able to come into a program with us and use our classes to build those assets and build that process. That to me is like the most extreme situation that I would love to see.
Yeah.
We've talked about this, that students in higher years can control more, whether it's Umer's and the game programmer professor's ideas of the midstone and then the capstones that we have in many of our programs. Kind of looking at the Lego blocks of skills, how do we continue to break down the silos that are in any educational institution between different program areas? And again, in our group, we do this well. You guys teach across different across different programs. That's already something that's not usual in every situation at Humber and other institutions. The big picture here is that this is a community of learning. The idea is that what you said earlier, this isn't just the students learning, this is the profs learning. And in my ideal world, play days will become a time, whether it's a week, whether it's a day a week, whether it becomes just a part of the whole zeitgeist, where staff, administrators, profs, people from other faculties, maybe even people from other schools can engage with us in these explorations, and that we learn to value these explorations for what they are. if we want to have our students go out into a world that is ever changing, we want them to break the mold. We don't want them to fit the mold.
Yeah,
and exactly. We already know we have some pretty major cultural issues and social issues to deal with. Major. We need to be developing the generation that's going to solve the problems that the previous generations have made by challenging what is authority, what is knowledge, who's up high in the hierarchy. And it might sound a little bit overly grand to suggest that play days is the nudge for that. But I actually don't think it is.
I remember
a particular prof saying one sentence in a class and in 1 week that changed the way I thought. So yeah. If we break out of a hierarchical model, if we break away from the idea of elitism and good students and bad students, and you know, only the website that is the most beautiful gets the high grade. Why? Why isn't it what the student went through to get where they were going? Who cares what the lipstick on the pig looks like?
Yes.
You know,
I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've always tried to figure out how to implement. And I think this year, finally, I figured out how to do that, like rewarding the process over the end result.
Yep.
Because I think like there's, in addition to, you know, what you go through in learning the concept and applying it, you know, like what we were talking about even earlier is that everybody goes through their own sort of life situations and risks mm-hmm. and sacrifices to be in the room with us. And, you know, that takes a lot of courage, a lot of bravery, mm-hmm. a lot of everything. And mm-hmm. we need to actually reward that as well.
Sure.
Some people need a little bit more time and a little bit more, you know, I don't like to call it hand holding, but I mean, they just need to be guided. And and that's all that we need to provide is just show them how to navigate through the process and encourage them and let them know that they will get there. And I think Playdays is, like you said, that perfect sort of safe place for them to know that they can make mistakes, have failures, but not in the traditional sense of what those two terms mean.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Like even I remember like me telling you, like, I just want my opportunity to fail. But that didn't mean I'm going to just like, you know, you give me a chance and I'm going to like mess this whole thing up. It's just right. that, you know, I need that time to experiment, that time to find. Yeah, exactly. Find my place without that sort of like consequence or judgment. And I think what you mentioned also earlier is that we have that space, and why not, you know, if everyone believes in that as a philosophy to make everyone better, why not give that opportunity to our students and provide them with that learning environment that does just that?
Yeah. And you know? And realizing how lucky we are to have that and taking the opportunity, I was able to go and present at League, the League for Innovation, at the end of February. And I talked about play days with a number of professors, administrators, whatever, from post-secondary institutions across North America. And many of the people in the room said, my whatever, whoever's their senior, would never let me do this. And, you know, I knew we were lucky. I know that we're well led. I know we're in a good institution, and that when we focus on the why, and we know that the why is that we want to build a safe learning environment for our students, but we also want them to push limits, right?
Yeah.
I think that we would be remiss if we didn't take advantage of the fact that we can play and that we can offer that to our students and ourselves.
So, I mean, like, even with that said, like, we might be influencing some other schools within our own school and probably some others who might listen to this. So, like, if other schools would like to start their own play day initiative or join in to ours and what we have going, what supports are needed to get play day activities off the ground?
Like, it's a very, very good question. I think that people need to understand logistically and process-wise that the prep starts a year ahead, and that you really have to, this is my opinion, this does not mean this is the only way to do this. This is just my experience. I'm sure there are other ways to do what we've done, but that you have to start a year ahead, that you need your team to think as a whole. You know, we have educators are insanely passionate people about what it is that they teach, and they take the responsibility of teaching their students incredibly seriously. And what you find is that as soon as you say to an educator, and I was a prof in the classroom too, so I get this, as soon as you say to somebody, hey, we're going to take a week away from you teaching people typography, and we're going to do this, and it's a value, a prof's natural inclination is to push back and say, no, I don't have enough time as it is to teach what I need to teach. Yeah. So there's got to be an awareness built within your team of all the reasons we've talked about today about why this is of value, and why giving students a bit of a break here or there also allows them to go deeper into their learning when they return, perhaps to your specific subject matter. I think that everybody needs a Sam Araza. You need somebody who's not in the curriculum, but who logistically keeps things moving forward. So you definitely need, this would have been her full-time work for at least a month of the fall, her full-time hours. And she's a very efficient person, as we know. So you need someone like her. I don't think you can wait for full buy-in. I think once you know that you have some of your leaders on board, or even that they're coming to you saying, let's do this, yeah, I think you need to jump on that and go for it. You need to make sure it's safe, and even that your team sees you're struggling too. I think that makes it, you don't have all the answers, and it's okay to not have all the answers, all of these philosophical things. You need to be ready to mess up. But I think we're kind of, all of us have been sacked into this a little bit now because of COVID. We're all flying by the seat of our pants a little bit. At least we were as we finished out the winter semester. We all went on to a Microsoft Teams call and went, I don't know how to get my audio up, right? We all had those situations where we were learning on the fly. And I think that may help us with ideas like play days, because I actually think that people might feel a little more confident about their abilities now that we've been forced to a place of discomfort. But other than that, I think it's really thinking about the assets that are needed when you need all of your class time. So when we designed play days, what we did is we used the classrooms that we already would have had for classes that week to host the activity. We used the same schedules for those classes. And what we did to all of our profs was we said, you are not teaching your usual class. You're going to take those same hours and facilitate play days. And then you need your full-time team, in our case, as you guys did, to build the description of the workshop and share that with the people who are facilitating, so that basically, quote unquote, anyone could stop in and help out with that session. Mm-hmm. So you have to think about those time pieces. One of the reasons we chose week 8, the week after reading week, for play days is so that the full-time team would have time over reading week to do the final preparation as well. You don't want this to layer on top of the usual teaching that people are doing, because again, everybody's already busy enough. But if you build it far enough in advance, then you can create that structure and create those assets. And then I think you need the student opinion. What do they want? What do they want to do? And instead of us deciding, hey, this is when I can actually get the students to learn that thing that I've never been able to teach them, we can propose topics, and that's what we did. But then the students came back to us with what they wanted. And yes, we want more of this. What about this? What if you did that? And that happened to help us a lot. And the other part of it is we have to trust the students to be engaged. I think the biggest worry that we heard collectively as we were planning this the first time around was, what if students don't come? What if they don't want to do this? What if they don't show up? What are we going to do? Because we're so used to having the stick of grades, which we still used. Yeah. But it was 5%. Yeah. So I think there was a lot of trepidation because we don't trust the students to come all the time. We have 60% attendance a lot of the time. So we thought, what's going to happen here? But the thing is, we need to trust the students will engage if it's engaging. And you guys made it engaging.
Yeah. And I think part of that too, part of the engagement also, I think, Heather, is to be transparent and let them know how this applies to what they're learning and their career.
Yeah.
I think that is like the thing. Like when you teach something, you have to say, like, here's the why, here's the when, now here's the how. You know, like you have to answer those questions or else if you're just telling them the what and not the why and when they apply it and how they apply it, then yeah, they might lose that sort of engagement. But if you're saying that they got a chance to actually contribute in what's being delivered now, now they're giving you the why and the when. Now it's on us to figure out the how.
Yes.
How do we give them that? So we just kind of reversed it, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's the exciting part is like when you have both parties involved in saying, okay, this is how I can give it to you. And you tell me what it is you want and why you want it and how you're going to apply it, right? I think that is where the connection sort of takes place.
Right? Yes, I agree.
They can actually start to see like, okay, this is what I came here for. This is what I want to learn. This is what I want to know how to do because of A, B, and C.
Yep.
Right? So I think it's great that we get students to participate by including them in the process.
Yes.
Of actually designing play days.
Yeah.
Right. So I guess finally, what I would ask is for students who participate in play days, what would you say would be the number one thing they should get from taking part in play day activities?
Yeah, it's a hard one, but I think the number one thing would be that they come out with more confidence about their own ability to step into a less structured situation. And that they can trust themselves and others to engage with them. I think that's the thing. And you and I both know because we educate now, in the now, with the students of the now, we have students who come out of standardized testing. We have students who come out of systems where education, you know, the carrot and the stick is the grade. Yeah. What does this teacher want from me? I'm going to figure out what this teacher wants from me and I'm going to deliver that. And then I'm going to get the grade. Was there learning? Maybe. Was it meaningful? Maybe, right? But I think what we want to do in this circumstance is let them see that the learning is for them and that they can go into a situation without knowing exactly what they're supposed to do and just be there and participate. And that's the value of the experience.
Perfect. I think that is number one, bang on, confidence. Because once you have the confidence, everything else comes along afterwards, right?
And take the next risk just a little bit easier.
Yeah, exactly. So thank you, Heather, for taking the time to speak with me about Humber Play Days. I'm so glad to be a part of such a great initiative that gives our students an opportunity to expand their learning across pathways and build relationships with others in such an open and risk-free environment that encourages curiosity and rewards innovation. So as always, it's a pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you very much and best of luck, and let's see what happens this year.
Yeah, we'll see. Thank you, Heather.
All right, take care.
Bye. For show notes and links mentioned in this podcast, visit howdwegetherepodcast.com. To receive updates and new episode releases, subscribe to the podcast and follow me on Instagram and Twitter at edtechxd for all things education and design with wellness in mind. Thanks so much for listening.